Okay, Paddy, welcome back. So as promised, we're now going to kind of dive into assessment and ethics. So, kick this off, there's so much conversation on assessment anyway, around plagiarism checkers, this, that and the other. I think with AI and generative AI coming over the hill, I'm going to say it was pre-Christmas 2022, kind of becoming more mainstream, it's now kind of really raised a lot of questions around assessment and around cheating, around plagiarism, but it's much broader than that. So for, I know when we talk previously, it's around the design of assessment and how we can use AI and to really change what we think and how we deliver assessment. So I guess to kick us off, what are your initial thoughts around that topic?
So I think as any teacher, we spend a lot of time thinking about our assessment methods. For myself, I plan, where am I going to get to? Where do I want to get to? And what do I want to assess? And then I work backwards with my teaching content. There are some risks, certainly, with using generative AI. But there's also, I think this is an opportunity to rethink assessment and how we assess our learners, which we've all been speaking about for a number of years now. And it's thinking about what's the best way to live in a world with AI, generative AI, and be able to assess my learners and know that it's authentic, it is their work, it's up to date, and that they're actually learning from it, not just producing something. So it's thinking about, how can we have got the power to change assessment within our own teaching, within our own topics. I've taught IT, for example, and IT technical support. And there was one part in the specification where learners had to demonstrate that keyword demonstrating that they were given a number of scenarios and they had to resolve a couple of IT technical support issues. Lockdown came along and we were teaching online and I needed to assess them. So what we did, we switched it up and I had Teams meetings and I gave them time beforehand to research a number of topics, and then in the meeting I gave them five different issues, and then they had to explain to me as if we were face to face between two different people at one side of each side of a desk, and they were really enjoyed that. So I kept that the following year when we were back into class. It's thinking about how we can pick up assessment, and it's that holistic assessment. So what I've done this year in my teaching was look at thinking, right, I'm teaching a number of different units and we're, for example, covering very similar topics, GDPR, data protection, and so on. How can I reduce my assessment and also cover everything? So I've looked at the whole curriculum and we cross-mapped as much as we could. And then I broke it down to project-based learning. Instead of all the learners having the same assignments or having the same topics, we broke it down. And they, for example, designed and developed a game. They chose their game. They had to project manage that game. They had to build. They had to evaluate their assets. They had to look at the legal sides of that and the ethical side of that. But it was all based on their specific game. So that became holistic. They wouldn't be able to put that into a computer, into any generative AI, and come out with those results because it was all based on their game. So it's picking up assessment and changing it in a way. And actually, I found that helped my marking because I knew I'd marked a number of assignments, but it covered a number of different units. So it reduced my workload in that respect, but also the learners were far more engaged than if I taught legal and ethics and IT, human-computer interaction, games design and IT project management all separately. So it's thinking about different methods that we can assess them. It's also, I think, about having those discussions with the learners and thinking, is this your work? Are you writing an answer just for an assignment or are they learning from it? We've had for a number of years essay mills that learners who've got the money could potentially go and buy an essay. We've had those risks and those have been getting more and more varied, so they're harder to pick up as a teacher unless you've read one for yourself, for example. So there's also plagiarism checkers, which we've had for university level turn in for a number of years. The worry with any generated AI is checkers. We've got AI checkers. However, they have proven that they can also have false positives. So I would be concerned with using a tool that checks for generative AI checkers for students' work, for example, because it could push out a false positive. And then we could be saying to our learner, you know, you've plagiarized, when actually they haven't. I was reading an article yesterday that was showing that it's mathematically impossible to actually have any AI checker 100% of the time correct. So we can't rely on that. Is another issue. It's about what we've done before. It's thinking about our assessment method. We did it. We've done it for a number of years. It's trusting ourselves, speaking to our colleagues and sharing best practice and ways we've got around it. And then actually looking, well, hang on a sec. My learners are enjoying this more than they did a couple of years ago, where they were almost themselves just essay after essay after essay. And thinking about it like that. We are at a stage where we can, with generative AI, we can either do one of three things. We can either avoid it, we can either outrun it, or we can embrace and adapt it. If we avoid it and we revert, for example, just to exams, we know some people do better in exams. We also know variety is important. But again, the exams, it places so much focus on one small time. If we outrun it and we use things like generative AI checkers, they'll always be ahead of us. Everybody will always get ahead of us. We've had this, you know, Google essay mills and asking about learners to reference all the way through. But if we embrace and adapt it, and if we try and get an understanding of it, it will be much easier. And we think about, I need to make this assessment authentic. I need to make sure it's my learners. Let's embrace AI. Let's utilize that for our learners. And also let's let them embrace that. Maybe something like checking their learning, checking their proofreading. They could use it to proofread before they hand in. And that is a simple changing, that's a game changer. Before they'd have to pay somebody to have a proofreading service, whereas now they can use it. It has been around for a number of years, but it's just thinking about what way we can impact it on our learning. We've also got things like, a number of years ago, we looked at the SAMR model and improving our learners' digital literacy, because we know they need it for the workplace. So before we had substitution, the S from SAMR, technology access direct substitute with no functional change. So maybe they would be typing a Word document. Augmentation, technology access direct substitute with functional improvement. That might be something like a Word document with Grammarly and spell checker. And then maybe we've got modification technology that allows significant task redesign using spreadsheets, for example, calculations, formulas, redesigning posters, creating infographics. And then we've got where we're at the moment is the redefinition. Technology allows for the creation of new tasks previously inconceivable. So our learners are going to go into the workplace and have to be aware of AI because it will be very much part of our future. But also, if we're asking our learners to redefine what they're looking at instead of having that chalk and talk, assignments that were very black and white, answer these questions and complete these assignments or get prepared for this exam in this way, at least if they can utilize it in that way, it will change for them. And a number of ways that my learners have used it, and I was quite impressed with, just before the exams this year, my learners were, we only had a number of past papers as the qualification was quite new. And one of my learners, I was really, again, astounded with him, typed in to ChatGPT, typed in some questions, and it was able to produce for them a number of exam-type questions. So we'd run out of questions for this learner to practice on, and I had written a few as well, but it was having time. But this learner had come back, and it had produced for them a number of questions. So then we were able to have a discussion in class, and I was able to look over the work and say, fantastic, or I don't think it's very good here. But then we shared that around with other groups as well. So it's learners using it in that respect as well to make their lives easier and more. That learner was not so nervous when it came to the assignment, to the exam in the summer.
No, I think, again, that's all really interesting. And by me, a couple of key principles that jumped out. One is the embracing it, not fearing it, because it is here to stay. And that embracement, I don't know if that's a word, but that embracement is a word now in my world, is around, well, absolutely, how can it help us as practitioners to even generate different type of assessments, scenarios, type of things that we would like students to produce. That point there around students using it to aid their own learning experience, you know, fantastic in terms of exam questions, exam responses and styles and this, that and the other. The most important bit for me are kind of words that have been banded around for years, but sometimes the problem is they mean everything or nothing, but authentic assessment and holistic assessment. The conversation I regularly have with practitioners out there, the sector and seniors in the sector, is, well, we should be developing our curriculum with their end goal in mind, whether that be further study next level or whether that be industry. And I wholeheartedly agree with that. And again, hopefully this conversation here, not necessarily between you, but kind of broader conversation on assessment, AI, and assessment check has not been accurate, plagiarism check has not been accurate, and so on and so forth, might provoke some different thinking. We had conversations this time last year with colleagues from Edinburgh College around project-based assessment, which is nothing new whatsoever, but there's some scepticism around, one, doing it. It kind of goes on the too hard to do pile, sometimes mapping and overlaying qualifications, assessment specifications. Secondly, satisfying EVs and so on and so forth. But there's no better time to rethink assessment than right now, for all of the reasons that you've talked about today, and I wholeheartedly agree. And it's around embracing AI and how we can do that, how we can keep it really simple, how we can make it authentic. And it goes back to the conversation we had in our first episode around meaningful interactions, relationships, students, student development skills over time, all these things. Well, assessment should really just be a method of measuring progress over time and competency and so on and so forth. So I go back 10 years. There were students in year one of a qualification getting memory sticks off students in year two of the qualification, getting their assessments, changing them. It's nothing different. It's just different ways of the minority trying to play the system. And we shouldn't then change the system to address the minority. We should change the system to focus on the majority and really try and embrace it to rethink assessments and utilize this as a method of developing our students to be the future workforce. Because as you've alluded to as well, industry are using AI, you know, huge amounts. So we need to prepare our students for what their next steps into industry to be competent, efficient, and be able to use this effectively to do their jobs. So, sorry, go on. It looks like you go come
absolutely.
In there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's thinking about what ideas it gives us, that authentic and holistic assessment. And you're right, with the EV, certainly you've got, I know myself as a teacher with my work going off for EV, it's thinking about it, but it's also trusting ourselves, isn't it? It's trusting ourselves and being confident with it and speaking to our colleagues and saying, yeah, is this hitting that criteria? Yes, it is. Absolutely, it is. And it's just changing it around and not having, as you say, the memory sticks year one to year two. I've witnessed that myself and the same pieces of work coming in. It can't be. Topics change. Topics change. So it's about us updating our topics and understanding in that way.
And the key bit is, you know, using some English language, skills, knowledge and behaviours, and so on, how assessment evidences development and competence within those areas. And I know kind of Coates and Scott will have kind of similar language, but it's the same principles of, we're not here just to impart knowledge on students and then impart the knowledge back in the assessment and report. We've got to be a lot more, much more dynamic with that. And like I said, this may be the catalyst for that change to provoke people to think, oh, I need to think differently now. I need to move away from 10 reports. We should be doing that anyway, because if I think from a student's perspective, if I'm just writing 10 reports and 30,000 words over the year, what's the purpose and principles of doing that there as well?
Absolutely. It's a variety of assessment, isn't it? And it's an opportunity for us to think about that and use this technology, save time, so that we've got the time to spend on that assessment planning. Absolutely.
And again, I guess starting points for me are, it is that blank bit of paper. It's that reflection time when you've got some time away from students or before you finish on leave for the summer to think, well, actually, well, how do I want to assess my students? What do they need to demonstrate? How do we do it? And it's mapping it all to the qualification specifications, having that conversation with peers. And again, we've got a podcast and a workshop on this last year as to how the lecturer did it and kind of went from 25 learning outcomes down to 5 assessments. Because again, before they did project-based assessment, they had 25 assessments, you know, which obviously wasn't right either. But it's around, yeah, from my interactions again with different award organisations, they're typically okay with it. As long as the evidence is there to meet the individual criteria, they don't care what way it comes in. I remember recording podcasts with students back in 2017 where they're recording voice memos on the phone and emailed it in. It was a nightmare to mark, but from their skill set, it was really interesting to get students to think differently, because my principle to them was, we're just communicating. That's all you're doing. You're communicating in a quiet room by yourself, whereas others got really creative, put music, jazzed it up and did whatever. But that's what we're here for with students. We're not here just to get them to take assessments. It's around how can we be more dynamic. And as you've alluded to as well, from a student's perspective, AI can really support them. It's not It's not a negative of, ooh, somebody's used AI. It's actually, how can they use that to help refine their work, to help improve their work? I do that in my role. I'm sure you do that in your role too. So it's a good thing for students to do it.
Absolutely. It's thinking about how they can use it, how we can use it. That exam question that my student came up with, I've got, you know, it's thinking about those ways to use them. And thinking about that, just the last few things I think on the main parts of assessment, what I had done this year was when I realized that a number of learners had found generative AI, was we had an assignment, they did their assignment, and it wasn't all covered in the specification. It wasn't all covered, sorry, in the assignment. So then we had an open discussion where we recorded the discussion in the classroom. And I was conscious of my SV and my EV. So I wrote down the minutes into the conversation of where they'd hit the criteria. So then I could hand over that document and then they could listen to the whole recording, but also they knew where it was being hit. So it's thinking a bit, oh, we've been doing these for years, but it's just remembering perhaps some of the ways that we've done them. There's another way that my learners have used ChatGPT, where I've had them they've typed in, for example, a question, write me 10 questions based on human computer interaction or childcare, and then it's come back with those answers for them. That was part of their understanding of the topic. And then they've used that in their assignments. So it's just these different ways that we can think about it.
No, I think that's great. And again, as we talked in the first episode around kind of tech emerging, we trialed the Teams Premium, I think it was yesterday, around, well, actually that can be a part of a meeting and capture some minutes and actions and time. So that kind of, that manual aspect there of coding as to when so-and-so said what, again, AI will be able to support that in time once that becomes part of customs and practice. So yeah, it's huge. So I guess my final point on assessment before we kind of move on ethics is, my view is that we as practitioners, as lecturers, managers, it's our job to upskill in this space. We need to be competent in the space. One, to be able to kind of understand how it's utilized by students and ourselves, but two, to educate students as to how to use it, which does tie into ethics bit a little bit, but as to how to be able to use it, what's right, what's wrong. So I think that's a segue there, that didn't mean to be, but into ethics. So Paddy, where do we start here in terms of ethics and mitigating risks in relation to AI use in education?
We, at the end of the day, it's a new area. So we've worked out the ethics, aren't we? We're working out which ways to go with it. I have experience. I'm going to start with my learner. My learner this year, at the beginning of the year, found generative AI. And in a real world situation in my classroom, he emailed me one night about 1 o'clock in the morning. He was a 16-year-old, and emailed me, "Hi, sir, I can't sleep. I've been using generative AI since the beginning of the year to do my assignments. Couldn't sleep. Was he going to fail the course? He's got his exam coming up. He was worried." Came into class and I said, "Let's sit down. Let's have a chat. Let's calm down and let's have a look at it." Ethically, straight away, I had to think to myself, "Oh my goodness, he's given me work that I can't check. I don't know if it's generative AI or if it's his own work." So we sat down and we came up with a plan. When I say the student was in tears, he absolutely was in tears. He really loved the subject. And we did not want to lose him. So we came up with a plan. He went back over his work. He cited his work. He went back over and he gave examples. We had discussions. We recorded discussions over it. Now, for a learner to be in that place where they're thinking, "My goodness, I'm really upset, and what's going to happen?" We need to have rules in place. My learner at the time, there was a policy in place, but we need to have those discussions with our learners, I think, at the beginning of next academic year and say, what is right, what is wrong? Most centres now and colleges and universities have got policies in place, but it's having those ethical discussions with them, being honest with them and saying, you know, you can reuse it to research, but you have to put it into your own words. You have to give me examples. You have to show me your understanding. We cannot be in the place where we say, in my view, that we can't ban generative AI, because we're going to be in a place then that means we have to ban spell checkers. If we're going to ban AI, we could be banning Grammarly. Well, that's disadvantaging some of our dyslexic learners, for example. We have to come up with a agreed level of where AI is and where it's acceptable in our classroom. It's having those discussions with our learners and not having, like I had, a learner, bless him, I did not expect this to happen, you know. And luckily, I've been researching, I've been using it myself so I could have an understanding of it. It wasn't that, no, not at all. But also, I knew not to trust the checkers. So It's thinking about that ethically, what is right, what is wrong. We were here with Google a number of years ago. It's putting it into sensible terms. We have to think ethically. Are our learners putting any data? We can't have that because we've got GDPR. But for a number of years now, before I've used apps and being a computing teacher, we have to use certain Khan Academy and certain different sites where learners sign up. So we have to, I would have to check that through my GDPR officer and think about what data is my learner putting into there. So we have to make them aware of that. Again, we always have to make them aware of, is it correct? Is it wrong? Is it wrong? We know it can read them easier. We know it can read text. I think we need to have an open discussion with our learners in tutorial or something where we're talking about topics and seeing what it comes out with and pointing out the problems with it. I've had a couple of learners who have ADHD, ASD, and it's black and white, sir. Black and white is telling me this. We have to have those discussions. Otherwise, we could send them down the wrong path. The same as the internet. So ethically, we interestingly, at the National Center for AI, we've got a pathway towards responsible ethical AI, which is published as a report about what is the pathway to getting to a responsible and ethical use of AI. And we'll obviously share the link, but it's an interesting report and it talks about us, which way do we go with it at the moment. We have to think about what motivates us as users of it and think about what motivates our learners to use it. But actually, it's thinking which ways are the correct ways. Let's not scaremonger people, but let's take it and understand it that it can have problems with it. It can push out false information, but let's have that discussion with our learners most certainly.
No, wholeheartedly agree. And that goes back to what we said there. That responsibility comes back with actually having that confidence and competence in that space to be able to kind of to support students to understand it, to have that confidence and to be able to have those open conversations. You know, and that's not easy because, again, when I go back to the anecdotal figure I mooted within the previous episode, around 15% of the workforce being competent, well, that's not a lot. You know, so there's got to be some rapid progress made there across the sector in relation to upskilling and kind of raising awareness. And CDM we're developing some mini bites to kind of release in the hopefully in the month of June, if not kind of early July, around AI and kind of what it is and what it means in practice. But again, we've got professional responsibility to upskill our knowledge in that space. And I think in terms of ethics, again, there's a lot of bad press about this in terms of plagiarism checkers or in terms of students cheating and this, that, and the other. And that may have put off other people. I think the other point to note here around ethics, which you touched upon within the kind of previous bit of information, was around GDPR. And again, I'm going to kind of pass this back to you in a second in terms of what your knowledge and understanding is in relation to GDPR. Mine is I'm not going to say minimal, but I know that the context from across the Scottish sector is that colleges have taken different approaches in terms of whether it's been banned initially, not banned initially, but also then more so in terms of the rollout of this, because there's concerns from a GDPR perspective in terms of what data it mines, what data it holds, but also because of the risk of other bits of AI which may be imitating ChatGPT there as well. So it's a risk then for the way the workforce. But we'll park that second bit for now. Come at the first bit, GDPR. So using ChatGPT, what should and should I not put in there from your perspective?
Any personal details in there, I would only be using it for topics. I wouldn't be putting in any learners' names. I wouldn't be putting any grades. Just think back to any GDPR training that you've done. Treat this exactly the same. You wouldn't write it down and put it on a notice board somewhere. You wouldn't put it into there. We don't need to, we shouldn't, as long as we don't put anything in there, we're okay. That's what I would say. Just base it on those topics that you're teaching rather than any personal details.
Perfect. And again, as always, to kind of support and second that, it is then going to take your provider's advice in terms of what your college rules are there as well, in terms of expectations. I know some providers are saying, do not sign up with your college email address, sign up with a different one, whether that be a personal one or a kind of new email address for this purpose. So again, please do kind of take on board your college advice in relation to space, because obviously data protection is a huge and really important aspect. And the second part there, in relation to other sites which may mimic this, that's why I think some providers are wary as well, is because there are other things that may be popping up that may be imitating ChatGPT and otherwise, which may be more potentially more scrupulous. Is there anything in your awareness in relation to that at all? Or
at the moment, I know there's a lot going on around in Europe, in the UK, and over in America with legislation. And I think at the moment, from my understanding, that we're looking in the UK at handrails approach. So what support do we need either side of us? I understand that over in Europe, it's going to be a bit more regulated, and over in America, it's going to be a bit softer. So it's, I think we're finding our way with this. There's no answer at the moment. There's the government are looking into this, and we're certainly looking into this about how far AI will go. So it's that ethics, isn't it? I suppose it's the ethics. What information do we put into it? What do we take out of it? There's always going to be ethics around what it's generating. Now, thinking about it as well, it produces bias at the moment. I typed in a couple of months ago on a Sunday, what should I have today for dinner, and on a Sunday, and it produced a Sunday roast. Well, that in the UK, that might be what we have in the middle of winter, but around the world it won't. So we have to think about bias that at the moment the data sets it's going from. So it's thinking about what bias it might produce. Is there any intellectual property that I'm putting in information of any intellectual property? Some colleges will, we're all finding our way with it. So I think at the moment it's here, we're moving forward with it, but we need to understand our boundaries with it. And that's it really.
No, I think that's fantastic. And that was good, kind of my closing thoughts there as well. And I'll come back to you for anything else from you. But for me, I can really, what I've talked about is, firstly, my views, it's great. It can be a fantastic tool, a fantastic addition to our repertoire of tools that we use as practitioners. Secondly, it's vitally important, even from a professional practice perspective, an ethics perspective, that we upskill our own knowledge. We need to, because it's here to stay, as you've alluded to quite a few times, and it's becoming more mainstream, which I think is a good thing, but we all need to be aware. So if we're not confident, I'm afraid, sorry, we need to do something about it to increase our knowledge and awareness, because otherwise it will pass us by. And yeah, but the final point from me, which is the positive and forward looking, but the genuine aspect I'm really passionate about, is we can use this to help rethink what we do. And the context for that is there is some fantastic practice in the college sector, and there's some real innovations and some excellent practice and kind of rework the industry. But at the same time, there's other bits of practice that need to be improved further, that need to kind of listen to others. And that's not a criticism. It's just that, broadly speaking, our curriculum needs to ensure we're fit for purpose to help students meet their individual needs, which ultimately is progressing industry. And this can really help us do that from a learning and teaching perspective, as you've alluded to, in terms of workload and time, provide more time for interactions, but also development of skills. So for me, it's really exciting, but it's quite risky at the same time, because it's a lot of unknown, there's a lot of new there. So, but it's really important that we as a workforce develop our knowledge, our experience in the space, and utilize the materials out there. And like I say, CDN's providing a lot of information over this month and coming months. Paddy at JISC is providing a lot of information there as well. And we're going to try our best to very much curate that and make this as simple as possible to understand and think, well, what does it mean in layman's terms? So those are my few thoughts. Sorry, Paddy, if I've stolen any of your thunder there. I probably have done. But back to you just to finish off. Anything else from you?
It's thinking about it sensibly. It's here. We educators are good at adapting. It can provide personalized learning for our learners, almost intellectual tutorings for our learners, because they can utilize it in different ways. It can almost predict them, but we have to be aware of any bias, any discrimination, loss of any personal interactions. I think it's about using it to save our time so we get more personal interactions with our learners, but just using it sensibly.
Fantastic. Well, let's leave it there, Paddy. Thank you very much. Really interesting conversation, some fascinating points there. And as we've kind of shared through the two episodes, we'll share links that are kind of relevant as part of the description there as well for follow-up reading and follow-up information. But Paddy, thank you for your time. Catch up shortly.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.